today on Movie While Us, we talk a little bit more about what we've been streaming on VOD. It's time for Movie While Us. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yasky as well.
Movie While Us is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Happy Hello. Sunday.
Indeed it is, yes.
It is the day of rest again.
And that's exactly what we've been doing. I woke up this morning to feed the cat. Well, the cat woke me up to feed her. And with every intention to go out hiking. And I went upstairs and then...
Came back to bed.
And came back. I was like, I can't face going outside today.
Which kind of gave me license to cancel my exercise plans and fall back asleep as well. And so then I did what I hardly ever do, which is wake up past 9 a.m. Which sounds like such a luxury, right? I actually woke up at 9:45, which never happens. Very rarely.
Yeah. It was all the tequila.
Wow.
It was all the tequila from last night, yes.
How about you, Yaz? Are you having a restful Sunday?
I am. Today is just a boring housework day.
Yeah, it is a housework day today, isn't it? We've had things that have been waiting.
Yeah, and I was telling you guys before we started recording that I made the mistake of clicking on an old 30-year-old classic Indian movie late last night, thinking I'll just watch the first 15 minutes or so, and then I 2.5 hours later, it was like 1:30 in the night, but I enjoyed it thoroughly.
And you may as well tell our listeners what that was, Yazdi.
So that movie, I actually saw it on YouTube, and there's a pretty good print of it on YouTube. The name of the movie is Sita or Gita, which literally means Sita and Gita. And it's about...
Like Yazdi and Rashmi, or Rashmi and Yazdi, or, you know, just two names.
It's as cheesy as it gets. It's about two twin girls who are separated at birth, and then confusion ensues when they are, you know, when they're older. And Hema Malini, who used to be, and still is, one of the most beautiful women in Indian cinema, she plays the dual roles, and it's got a classic star cast. And in fact, the director of Sholay, one of the all-time greatest movies, this was the movie he made before Sholay. And now that I've seen it, I can see there's so much, like, the same cast is there. Sanjeev Kumar, Dharmendra, Malini. Yeah. So I can see the footprint of that movie in this one.
And but it's on funny YouTube for and free. It has a great soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah.
And it's very much of its time. Like, if you want to see 70s fashion, go watch that movie.
So good.
Now, you said it was on YouTube for free. Is this like an official thing, or is this something that some teenager somewhere has uploaded a DVD into some dodgy YouTube account?
I don't know. I can check up. It seemed to be a pretty good print to me, but yeah, I can definitely link it
in the show. If you could send that to me, sure. Put it in the show notes. But, you know, with things like that, I always wonder whether or not that's still going to be there at some point, because... So, you know, YouTube might get a copyright takedown, but, you know, grab it while you can. I mean, these things are hard to find in many ways. So not that I'm an advocate for piracy in any way, but if it's there and it's available, and presumably, you know, it could be there with the copyright holders. We don't know. Cool.
Yeah.
Did it have subtitles and all of that for us?
It does have subtitles, yes, which I turned off. But yes, it has subtitles. And before I forget, I'm going to send you the link right now.
Sweet. Okay. I'll definitely put that in the show notes. So it sounds like that's a rabbit hole worth climbing down. Unlike the YouTube content I've been looking at, which...
Oh, my God, Joe. I don't even think you should...
I've got to say it now. So, Microsoft is coming out with a flight simulator program in August, and I've been getting all excited about it because Microsoft Flight Simulator back in the day was like one of the reasons I loved computing, was like this idea that you could do flight simulators. I don't know, it's really geeky. But what I've been finding, because it's been years since I've played a flight simulator game, what I've been finding, which has been absolutely hilarious, is that there are folks out there that will do like a long haul flight on a flight simulator in real time. So they will fly from like LAX to Paris on a flight simulator program for 11 hours.
Huh?
I know. I'm like, okay, that's crazy enough to do it. But then they record the flight and they post the recording to YouTube. And I didn't know about this. I was just searching for like flight simulator. And I come up with all of these long haul flights that people do. It's the most bizarre thing because, A, you know, who would want to simulate a long haul flight? If you're not like a pilot in training, like why do that? But people do. And then, then they upload it to YouTube, and these things have thousands of views. So, like, who's watching this stuff? I don't know. I clicked on this one video, and I thought, oh, this will be interesting to see. And, like, a couple of minutes into it, I looked at the time bar, and I was like, 11 hours to go.
Wow. I would
literally rather watch paint dry. But, look, I mean, it just was a very funny thing. So, yeah, that I haven't been watching them, Rashmi, just to allay our listeners that I'm not entirely psychopathic, but the fact that they exist, discovery that they exist is hilarious to me. So anyway,
and Joe, I actually have a update. Sitar Gita in full high definition is available on Amazon Prime. So forget YouTube. Yeah, forget YouTube, just watch it on Prime.
Yeah,
cool. Send me that link as well. Yeah. And I'll put that in show notes instead. Sweet.
Yeah,
okay. So, we kind of got a hodgepodge of things to talk about today, as is
always still, the case.
Yeah. Well, as is always the case, it's not the most organized of podcasts, but we still are not able to go to the movie theaters. Boo.
But that's not stopping us. No.
That doesn't mean that we're not watching movies.
We continue our mission.
We are indeed. I think I would like to just quickly talk about the release of Mulan. That's coming because Disney has kind of announced a very bizarre thing, which is that they're going to be charging $30 for Mulan. So Mulan and Tenet are the two big kind of studio movies that were planned.
Top Gun?
Top Gun got pushed out a while ago, but Mulan and Tenet have been playing this game where Mulan gets pushed back to put Tenet first, and then Tenet gets pushed back, we put Mulan first, and Disney and Warner's were kind of playing this game to see they always wanted the other movie to go first so that they could get a read on whether or not the world is ready for a blockbuster movie in theaters, and they've been playing this game. So eventually, you know, Tenet got pushed out indefinitely, Mulan got pushed out indefinitely, then Disney decided to use its Disney Plus service as a way of launching Mulan as a $30 fee. And what I understand they're doing is that it's not a $30 purchase or a $30 rental. For $30, you get Mulan added to your Disney Plus subscription. So you have to be a subscriber to Disney Plus for like $5 or $6 or whatever they charge, $7.99, I can't remember. And then in addition to that, you pay $30, which will add Mulan to the library of things that you can watch. So you pay the $30 and you can watch it as many times as you like. It's not a $30 streaming VOD one-time thing. It's a kind of addition to the library.
Okay.
But they're kind of making it up as they go along. So they haven't put any of this in writing. This was only announced via the analyst's call. So it's another model, right? To kind of launch these blockbuster movies where something gets added to your paid subscription. So, you know, it's not clear that if you then cancel your Disney Plus, do you lose that access to that movie forever? Like, how does that work? It's kind of an interesting model.
Yeah, and as we've said before, look, it's none of us ever go to the cinema spending that amount of money, because two tickets is easily $30. None of us go to the cinema expecting we're going to get a copy of the movie we just watched, right? So again, I think we had this exact discussion or very similar around, you know, the benefits of paying or not. I know for me, regardless of how I feel about paying, and I've said this before, I find it difficult to pay when there's a plethora of free content. So it is always difficult for me to pay. But for this one, I'll pay anything because I'm dying to see this live version of Mulan. I think it absolutely, as I think about it, is one of my favorite all-time Disney movies. I just love the character. I love the story. So I would definitely pay for this one.
Yeah, I think we will.
I, my personal feeling is I think Disney's taking a huge risk with this.
I agree.
If it was any other movie, I would have thought they're going to fall flat on their faces. But I think because Mulan has a built-in recognition factor and the previous, you know, Disney live-action movies have done so well, including, you know, the not-so-excellent Lion King remake, but certainly Jungle Book and other ones. So I think families which are bored with their kids will gladly pay $30, just to watch this epic, you know, brand new movie. But I kind of worry because this is directed by Nicky Caro, who has done many movies, including Whale Rider. And the whole movie was shot to be epic in scale and to look as gorgeous as all get out. And it's a shame that they're kind of, you know, giving in. I mean, every other movie has been put off till next year. So I personally wish they would have just left it and just let it be released next year and make its own money then. But maybe they're looking to provide their stockholders with something in terms of revenue for 2020.
That's exactly right. This announcement was actually made during their quarterly report, where they announced that their profits were down some ridiculous amount, like 80% for the year. Because basically the parks are closed, movie revenue has been, you know, even despite the launch of Disney Plus and all of that, their overall revenue as an organization is really hurting. So I think they're just trying to get some money in the bank this year to offset, you know, I mean, these are $100 million investments, right? So they need to kind of pay the bills on some of that stuff as it comes due. And the longer they sit on these assets, the more the cost of that money gets from a financial perspective. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to see it now.
Yeah, no, we will. We'll be part of the experiment. We'll check it out. But yeah, I kind of, again, you know, my feelings about seeing movies on the big screen. I'm with you, Yazdi. As much as I'm disappointed to not see movies like Top Gun or Tenet this year.
Or James Bond.
James Bond. Yeah, there's so many that have been kind of kicked out. I'm also glad that I'm not going to see them for the first time in a home environment. At least that's my hope for now. So, all right. Well, let's move along. So we thought today we would. So we signed up for Hulu. ASD, I know you did too. Our incentive was to watch the much talked about movie Palm Springs with Adam Sandberg, but. You know, we've
dipped. Andy Sandberg.
Thank you. Wrong Sandberg. I made one up. So the incentive to kind of give Hulu another go, because we've dipped in and out of it over the years, but you know, we've never really been long term subscribers. The content has always felt like too much of an overlap with regular TV to kind of add in another service. So, you know, now that we're kind of cutting back on our TV subscriptions, we thought we'd give it a go.
And Yazdi was telling us great things about it, right? Yazdi, you were a little bit ahead of us and you had already signed up. And so when this movie came out, and I have the intro when we're ready to talk about it, we kind of thought, yep, now there's something we want to watch it for.
Yeah, I mean, I held off on the Hulu subscription for the longest time. I kind of somehow managed to not watch The Handmaid's Tale, and then Little Fires Everywhere came out a few months ago. That's the one with Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington, and it's based on a book that I absolutely adore. And again, I held out for that one, but then there was a lot of fanfare for, and I heard from a lot of people that I have to watch Palm Springs, and it seemed right up my alley, and so I finally signed up for it. And to be honest, you know, as a movie reviewer, I feel ashamed now because there's just an embarrassment of riches on Hulu. And I think you guys will mention the same thing, but I continue to be amazed. And I spend a lot of my time just adding things to my queue right now to Hulu. And I think the one thing which I think where Netflix lacks in general is that they're not so good with old content, like older movies, older television shows. And rightly so, I think they're catering to the general commercial audience, and few people have, you know, sadly want to watch something from the 30s or 40s. But Hulu, by virtue of the fact that it comes from a television base, has just this amazing wealth of especially television content, American television content. The I Love Lucy is on it, and the Lucy Show is on it, and all of the Simpsons, you know, whatever 400 plus episodes are on it. Scrubs is on it. Golden Girls is on it. Jeopardy is on it. So they have just, you know, if you just want comfort food and, you know, if you don't have, you know, whatever your TV Land or your other TV subscription for classic
TCM.
TCM or whatever. Yeah. I think there's just so much on Hulu there.
Yeah. So let's jump in and review the movie that we're all raving about. So it's called Palm Springs, and I'll give a brief introduction. So when carefree Niles and reluctant maid of honor Sarah have a chance encounter at Palm Springs wedding, things get complicated as they are unable to escape the venue, themselves, or each other. So this is directed by Max Barbaco, who's got like a somewhat limited CV resume, and written by Andy Ciara, who's done a lot of TV, but this is actually his first, you know, major film screenplay. And it stars Andy Samberg, Kristen Milotti, and J.K. Simmons, amongst a whole host of others. And I actually got to do a Q&A with the three, Andy Samberg, Max, and Andy Ciara, a few weeks ago. So I'll post one of the pictures from that Q&A. But I did the Q&A before I saw the movie. And so I was kind of pleased to go in and then kind of catch up with what I had heard. So Yazdi, why don't you tell us first what you thought of Palm Springs?
So what got me to watch it and in effect sign up for Hulu was that I heard repeatedly that the movie is in the vein of Groundhog Day. And that's a movie which is very dear to me. And I, in general, like movies about, you know, people being caught in these kind of, you know, time loops and so forth. And so I went in, unfortunately, with some degree of expectation and some degree of knowledge about what this movie was going to be about. And I think what really amazed me is the script of the movie. Of course, it's about a time loop, but unlike, say, Groundhog Day, it's not this time loop playing ad nauseum, one day after the other after the other. And the whole point of Groundhog Day is until you change yourself, change your life, things will play out exactly the same. And this movie takes that and does an exceptionally good job with editing things. You're not given all the information in real time. It kind of flips back and forth. It does not repeat the whole day again and again. So they've done I'm really in awe of how they might have filmed this, because this movie, I think, lives and dies by its editing. And, you know, it was even going in knowing what it's about, the movie was never less than enthralling. My only pet peeve about it is I'm tired of this, you know, man-child character which keeps showing up in American movie after American movie. And, you know, Andy Samberg plays yet another man-child who doesn't want to grow up.
A lot of men are, Yazdi.
What?
A lot of men are.
I know, but it's
present
such
company
an,
excluded.
Present such an company excluded, of course.
Thank you for that clarification.
I know, but it's such an archetype. But anyway, outside of that, there is amazing chemistry between him and the female lead, Kristen Milioti. And Kristen Milioti, the only other place I knew her from was she was the mother in the television show How I Met Your Mother. She eventually plays the mother, and she is, considering that she's not as well known, she really holds her ground. The movie is one surprise after the other. I love how it ends, and we're not going to be talking about the ending, but I love how it ends. And it's visually pleasing. It's just aces in terms of its writing, and it's got good acting. I couldn't possibly ask for anything more. It lives up to the hype.
Yeah, and topical given we are in a somewhat Groundhog Day. So, Joe, what did you think of this?
Yeah, you know, I went into this like really cold. Rashmi, you had seen a Q&A with the cast and was definitely kind of the one driving our viewing this that particular day. So I came and sat down and I had no clue about this movie at all. And it's interesting. I mean, yeah, Yazdi, like you, my immediate reaction was, okay, here we go, another movie about a loser guy who's, you know, and I knew it had that kind of rom-com feel to it. But it very quickly showed its cards with the whole looping day premise, and then very quickly showed me that it was going to do something different with this same thing that we've seen before. And it worked terrifically well. I just found it really sharply written, very clever, like the two of you have both said, fabulously entertaining. And something surprising happened to me at the end of the movie, which was I almost immediately wanted to watch it again, which we did.
We did, because, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we, it's not often that we kind of revisit something so soon after watching it. But we went looking for those little clues that we didn't catch in the very first watching. And I think the two of us have both, you know, Rashmi and I kind of look at this movie as infinitely rewatchable, because there is so many little things that pop out to you. So Hulu is actually the perfect platform for this, because you know, rewatching something, as much as the movie theaters and studios would love us to do, keep going back to the movie theater, that's not something you can do. But when you have it on this type of on-demand streaming platform, it's really, really fun movie to kind of, you know, watch multiple times. So I loved it.
Yeah, I think this is probably one of my favorite movies of the moment. I won't say of this year, but certainly I can't stop thinking about this. And again, Yasti, just to build on what you were saying with Groundhog Day, you know, we've seen the time loop done before, and it's often just one person. But when you bring a different element, like two people being stuck in the same time loop or time loops of their own, it kind of opens up a whole other scientific discussion, right? And the impact of what happens. And this is funny and dark and smart and thought-provoking. And the Q&A was quite insightful now that I think back. And I wish I had watched the movie before I did the Q&A, but I'll give you a little few tidbits. So they had written and shot multiple endings, and what they did is they showed it to a number of their family and friends and basically went with the one that people liked the most. So take from the ending whatever you want to take away from it, whatever makes you feel good. But there are so many cute little things in here. This is like really good movie making. And it feels low-key, and it feels somewhat indie, like a very indie film festival type film, but I feel like this could easily become a classic.
Yeah, I mean, I've had discussions with a few other people with whom I normally text on the phone, and both of them had recommended the movie to me, ex-colleagues actually from Pfizer, and they were absolutely convinced that the movie ended one particular way. And I was convinced the movie ended one particular way. And when I spoke with them, I realized, oh my God, you know, it's not as straightforward as it thinks. And what's the significance of that? And what's the significance of this? So yeah, it's endlessly rewatchable. And I also like Vulture.com has a wonderful article exactly on the point you made, Rashmi, which is that since the success of Groundhog Day, which is an acknowledged classic now, there have been many attempts to, you know, about people caught in a loop. And I think the Vulture article points out that the genius of Palm Springs is it takes the concept and says, well, wait a minute, what if I add a second person to this, you know, who is not from the same, I don't want to say same universe, but has a whole other world of their own now if you add to it. And I think the movie also is very self-aware, which is why it comes across as very smart, is because it right away dispels that unlike Groundhog Day, it's not going to be one where if they better their lives, they get out of the loop, you know. And there's this whole joke about how you can use science or maybe not. And it's very tongue-in-cheeky. You know, there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek there. And it's very kind of snarky almost in saying, well, do you want to believe this nonsense kind of thing? I almost saw it that way. So it's very affectionate about the genre to which it's belonging, and it's improving in a way. So I was just with the last act of the movie, I had a smile on my face, even as I was very eager to find out how this is all going to play out.
Yeah, so. It's been the source of much conversation in our house as well, because I think the two of us had different interpretations on the meaning of the ending, and it's fun, and it drags me all in my mind kind of in lots of different philosophical directions about, you know, the nature of life and the nature of the world and, you know, the specific type of hell that they're in. So And you know, even the movie not just has that kind of ending, which is open to interpretation, but it has a number of kind of deliberate things that it introduces but doesn't explore. And so again, I don't want to get too much into spoiler territory, but there are some wonderful moments involving, you know, J.K. Simmons' character. There are some wonderful, and you know, there are some wonderful moments that kind of have you thinking about, you know, your own life or their life or what the meaning is of each day, of the importance of each, you know, it's just really great stuff.
And like I said, so topical given we're in this quarantine where the days just merge. Right? It just felt like absolutely. The right film to watch. So I can wind this one up. I mean, for me, this is easily, I love this stuff. I love time movies. I mean, we've talked about the great movie About Time many, many times. And I think since then, this is probably one of my favorite time loop movies. So I could watch this one again and again and again and again and again. I could watch this one again and again and again and again. I could watch.
I see okay. what you did there.
Easily, 9 out of 10.
Whoa.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I mean, I would give it an 8.5 out of 10, and I'm going back down to an 8. I need to watch it again and maybe get, I've only watched it once, and so the full extent of, you know, how they must have gone ahead just plotting everything to see how everything works together. I need to figure that out in my head. I love the fact that the movie has these amazing side characters. Peter Gallagher is in this. J.K. Simmons. Him. Peter Gallagher is so good in this. So J.K. Simmons, who really plays on his goofy, violent charm in this movie in a very particular way. June Squibb, who we don't see much. She has like 2 or 3 lines, but she totally nails it. So I really like that. And I think the thing which ultimately clinches the genius nature of the movie for me is the fact that that Vulture article ends with saying, and this was an insight to me as well, and maybe it's a giveaway of some kind, but I cannot not say it, is that the movie ultimately might be the best cinematic depiction of marriage. Which, when you think about it, is two people from different worlds who are stuck in the same day over and over and over again for the rest of their life, which is brilliant. I think that's what the movie might be. I would add,
if you're lucky enough.
Yeah, if you're lucky enough, yeah.
Very, very cynical. So, yeah, I mean, on initial viewing, this was a good, solid 8 out of 10 for me. What surprised me was my response to seeing bits of it again on a second time. So, if nothing else, that kind of improves my score, because you realize just how well crafted it is to fit together in the way that it is. So, my admiration has gone up. I'm gonna do the 9 as well. As ridiculous as that sounds, I mean, this isn't generally my kind of stuff, but it's just given me so much like chow for my brain. I love movies that do that. So good, great stuff. Really enjoyed that. So I guess we thought we would stick with Hulu because this was actually a gateway drug, so to speak, for our foray into Hulu. And so, you know, they have a 30-day trial, which we're still in. And, you know, we signed up for the ad-free plan because I hate ads, which is like $12 a month. But while we were in it, you know, Rashmi, I know you in particular have spent a good amount of time browsing through the content. I was surprised at, like, just how vast their catalog seems to be. I mean, they have tons of stuff, but they also have a lot of original content. I know Handmaid's Tale, you've spoken about many times on this podcast, but it's one that you love, and I think there's a season there for you to watch.
There is, yeah.
What else have you been...
So I've been binge-watching my way through a program called Rami, and I kept ramming this down Yazdi and Joe's throats. I don't think I've been successful yet. I only started it this week, and I've already completed the first season and on my way, you know, well on my way into season two. So this is basically written by Rami Youssef, and it stars Rami Youssef. And basically the description is, in New Jersey, Rami, son of Egyptian migrants, begins a spiritual journey divided between his Muslim community, God, and his friends who see endless possibilities. And it sounds so strange, even as I read the tagline, but this is exceptional. This is funny and witty and dark and, again, thought-provoking. I could say exactly what I said about Palm Springs, except it's no time loop. It really takes your perceptions of a minority community and all those things that you think you know about Islam or any religion and turns them on their head. And it's so clever. And each show is about 20-something minutes, very easily watchable. And its genius is that it's about the migrant experience. So he is an American born of, you know, Egyptian parents who migrated. And it just tells that story that we've all lived so beautifully. And it's, you know, it gets a bit smutty and a bit fresh and, you know, don't watch this, you know, it's TV MA, MLA. It's so good. It's so good. I love this show. It's my new favorite show.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
And I think he just won an Emmy. Just got one...
Well, got nominated for a whole bunch of Emmys. Yeah. I mean, I think we've come a long way since the day of True Lies, which, by the way, I love that movie. But since the day of True Lies and those other action movies where the only time you would find Muslims on television or in media were as terrorists or as, you know, people, extremists of some kind. And I think I've, you know, the podcasts I listen to very often, they've all been talking about how great it is to see a complex, you know, multidimensional Muslim character at the center of a show which is about contemporary America. And, you know, I hear a lot about his mom, who's apparently an Uber driver, and, you know, the whole thing about the whole push and pull between culture versus the place where you've assimilated and so forth. So no, I mean you don't need to convince me. I just need to sit down and make the commitment, but I do want to watch it.
I haven't been watching it other than I feel like I know the show by proxy just because of how much Rashmi has been talking about it. This is another one that generates a lot of conversation because for the reasons you state, Yazdi, I mean, you know, none of us, you know, are Muslim or have, you know, a great deal of personal insight into, you know, that particular world perspective. And so, you know, Rashmi's given me a number of kind of setups that the show has that subvert the traditional view of what, you know, we perceive from the outside of the Muslim community to be. So again, I'm actually looking forward to trying to get a few of these episodes in, certainly before we give up Hulu. And it looks like the kind of thing that if we give up Hulu, it looks like it's interesting actually, because we haven't really discussed whether or not we're gonna let the month click over into the paid period. But I think just in terms of pure value alone, I would have happily paid the $12 for Palm Springs. And so, you know, when you have quality like that, I actually want them to get revenue from us. You know, I wanna pay for good content. Like that's not something I object to. But sorry, Yazdi, you were gonna say something?
No, I was gonna mention that maybe I'm more cheap than the two of you because I did sign up. I didn't even know they had an ad version and an ads-free version. And I signed up for the ad version, and I'm happy to report that it's not nearly as annoying as you would think. It's not like YouTube where, you know, every 10 minutes a set of ads come up that you have to watch. So the ads only, first of all, they only ever come up in new content. The older shows, older movies, there's virtually no ads. And to their great credit, the ads only appear at the start and the end of a program.
Ah.
So for a movie even, the ads come at the start and then that's it, the whole movie. And so it's not annoying from that perspective. And the other thing I was going to add is I just, you know, I pulled the plug and I don't have any television. So for me, I may actually sign up. Hulu has a live television combination. I think it's $30 or something like that.
Yeah, I think you were mentioning it during the last podcast. I was telling Joe. Yeah.
So I may just do that. But so for me, it's, you know, my cumulative costs for entertainment is just Netflix right now and now Hulu. So it's still, for me, a very worthwhile endeavor, yeah. Especially because I'm continuing to find all kinds
gems,
of stuff.
Gems, it like sounds like.
Gems and things, and we'll be talking about our recommendations in a minute, but we've been watching so many movies at film festivals over the years, which were gems, just praying that they somehow find distribution. And now I'm finding them showing up on, you know, Hulu more than the other streaming services, and that just makes me happy.
So Yazdi, before we jump onto recommendations, I have been interested to hear about the one you've been watching, which is called Little Woods, which is described yes. as a modern Western about two sisters who work outside the law to better their lives. And I'm interested to see this has our favorite Lily James in here. So Tessa Thompson, Lily James, Luke Kirby, directed and written by Nia DaCosta. So tell us a little bit about Little Woods.
So Little Woods was a movie, I think it might be a British movie, but it was released everywhere else, and I actually saw it on the plane last year when I don't even remember what journey I was making, but I was interested because it has Tessa Thompson in it, who I really like, and this movie is exceptionally well made. It's an independent movie, and it's grimy, and it's very, very tense because, and it's very much off the time. It's about two half-sisters played by, you know, Tessa Thompson and Lily James. And essentially it's about people who are very, very poor and they have no choice but to, you know, to stumble into crime. And, you know, very often we are very judgmental about people. Well, serves them right for robbing this store, serves them right for selling drugs or whatever. But I think this movie, amongst many others, makes the case that sometimes people just don't have a choice. You know, that's what you have to do for, like, if somebody's sick in your home and if you need the money, you know, what are you going to do? And I don't think it makes, it in the slightest bit, makes a melodrama about this. But it's really the story about the Tessa Thompson character who has to agree to drive a set of drugs, essentially be a mule, in order to save her half-sister, who's played by, you know, by the Lily James character. And she gets involved with a lot of, you know, crime on the way. And there was a movie called Maria Full of Grace, which yes. came out, was nominated for the Foreign Film Oscar about 10 years ago. It was about the same thing because you see everything from the perspective of this one character who was forced to do drug trafficking. And it's very, very anxiety building. And it's to the great credit of both of those actors that they make you fully invested in it. So it's a beautiful gem of a movie about, you know, what you're willing to do for your family. Would definitely recommend it. It's totally worth your time.
And is it a Hulu exclusive or is it, is that just happening?
I don't think it's a Hulu. I don't think it's a Hulu exclusive. I think it's a movie which happened to show up on Hulu because
yeah, no,
I know
that's
the movie
because they have a number of exclusives, right? And,
yes.
and that's the
yeah.
I was just wondering if it fell into that category, but no, sounds that actually sounds really
right
good.
Up
I
your
mean,
street,
I love
sounds, yeah.
both of those actors yeah.
And just to be clear, the drugs we are talking about here, they're not like cocaine or heroin; they are illegal prescription drugs.
Which
is no better.
More interesting in some ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, Yazdi, I know you wanted to mention the movie that we spoke about, that we had seen, you and I, at Tribeca Film Festival in 2019. It's actually episode 425, the movie Plus One.
Yeah, so this, was it 2015?
19.
Oh, 2019. Okay, good. Because it seemed much
you
more
You were like, oh my
that.
God, I'm really old now. God, it was just last year.
It was last year.
Gosh.
Yeah, we watched it last year. Thank God. Yeah. So Plus One, to me, you know, there are all these tween rom-com movies that show up at regular frequency now on Netflix, and it catches the whole, you know, Twitterverse by storm, and people keep talking about him, and all the, you know, all the young ones, they kind of are obsessed about these rom-coms. And I have nothing against them. I've watched them. They're fine enough. Some of them are even better than some others. But a movie like this one, Plus One, I think is leagues ahead of anything that Netflix has shown. It's a very well-written, very cynical little romantic comedy. And it's about these two characters who...
I would say they're more millennial than tween, Yazdi.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So it's about older. It's about characters who are there. I'm just grouping romantic comedy as a genre. But to your point, absolutely, these are not tweens. These are in their late 20s, early 30s. And it's about two characters, a guy and a girl, both of whose friends have all gotten married and they've moved on and they're having kids and they're the only two ones single. And nowhere, and I can speak from personal experience, nowhere is your singlehood more traumatic than if you're attending a wedding where you're expected to go with someone else. And so these two characters decide that they will be each other's plus one for every wedding that they ever get invited to, that they have to go to. And the entire movie is constructed by them attending different weddings as the years go by, you know, being each other's plus one, and how their life has changed, and, you know, how they interact with each other. And, you know, it plays by the romantic comedy conventions, but it's just very smart.
It's bitey. It's bitey as well. Like, it's
very cynical.
It goes there.
Yeah,
it totally goes there. It's a bit smarter than the average rom-com. It's, you know... And I love that this is Jack Quaid and Maya Erskine, who's they're just adorable. Their chemistry is adorable on screen. Like, you are rooting for this to happen,
right? You are totally
rooting
for this. And Maya Erskine, in the first 10 minutes of the movie, has this breakdown. And if you watch the 10 minutes and don't think that she's an incredible actor who deserves better in life, then something's wrong with you. She is so good here. Just a natural actor as far as I'm concerned. And you know, Jack Quaid is Dennis Quaid's son. And, you know, it's
and
a
Meg
totally
Ryan,
work.
Yes, Dee?
And Meg Ryan, I guess. Yes. The X chromosomes also came from somewhere.
Yes.
No, Meg Ryan's son. And it's got a great supporting cast. Ed Begley Jr., who used to be in movies in the 80s, is here as well. It's a biting little romantic comedy that
it's
I would really
great.
Recommend.
It's absolutely great, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, next one on our list was, Yazdi, last one I think on Hulu was Pilgrimage.
Yeah, so I think this was about, gosh, I want to say 3 years ago that I saw this at Tribeca Film Festival. And I saw it with my friend Christina, and she and her friends wanted to watch a movie, and... the only tickets that were available for this movie was for Pilgrimage, and I knew nothing about this movie.
This was the year Tom Holland was in, like, every movie that we all watched that year at Tribeca.
Correct. So this is Tom Holland before he became
Spider-Man. Yep.
Okay, so a very young Tom Holland, but he was in a lot of movies that year, and my only reference point was, well, Tom Holland is in it, and John Bernthal, who I also like, he's great on everything he's done on television and so forth. And I went to see this movie, and I can honestly say, I mean, I saw it on the big screen, and I haven't seen anything since then. My jaw dropped just from the production design, and I'll tell you why. Because the movie is based like 35 years AD. So it's based like right after Christ has died. Well,
iPhones.
Or resurrected, yes. And the entire movie is about Christianity, which is... taken foothold in Ireland. And the premise of the movie is that there's this very, very valuable relic, which is believed to have been something that Christ himself owned. And that relic has to be rescued from the jungles of South America and brought to the Vatican. And so Tom Holland and a priest and this kind of... mercenary, the three of these people are entrusted with getting this relic and bringing it back to the Vatican. And it's an action movie all out, set in historical times with beautiful production values. It's brutally violent. It talks about religion at its very beginning. It talks about, you know, what's the value of a relic? Like, is it worth losing your life for? Is it worth killing others for? And it kind of starts this whole dialogue about, you know, is religion worth killing altogether? But it's above anything else. It's a brilliant action movie. I'm kind of weeping that it showed up on a streaming service because this movie needs to be watched on the big screen. But
funnily enough, Yazdi, this was one of your top three picks at Tribeca of that year. So you're very consistent. Episode 356, if you want to hear Yazdi's initial review of this.
Yes. So do watch Pilgrimage. I think if you really want to watch Spider-Man, I mean, now he's very, very popular, Tom Holland is. If you want to watch the kind of stuff that, you know, Spider-Man can really do if he was not in a big franchise, watch this one. And John Bernthal is brilliant in it. Money back guarantee, you'll love this movie.
Okay. Well, another one to add to our list, Joe. Yes. So I think that's everything for Hulu, because we would be amiss if we didn't mention the next thing that we're going to talk about, because it's taken Netflix by storm. And it is something that Yazdi and I are very used to the idea of. And it is the program Indian Matchmaking on Netflix, which has fast become one of the most popular shows on Netflix, which blows my mind that anyone would want to see this. I mean, I wanted to see this because I have a large family and many of the older members of my family have gone through this. I never had to, thank God, but it's basically 8 episodes.
And when you say this, you mean the idea that a marriage could be arranged with families versus meeting somebody, falling in love,
getting
married. Yeah,
it's kind of Tinder before Tinder existed, arranged by your aunts and uncles or parents.
That's abominable.
Right? That's really it. So Yazdi, I know you have so much to say about this, but before we let you speak about this, given you and I both have a lot of knowledge about how this happens, Joe, as the non-aware one of the three of us,
I'm not particularly woke when it comes to Indian arranged marriages. In fact, it's funny because, you know, watching this show evoked certain memories of the first time I learned, even within, you know, British culture. I had a friend who was from the Sikh religion, and I remember being horrified at the notion that he may have had more say in who his sister was becoming engaged to than she did. In fact, he met the intended a long time before she was even permitted to meet, which again seemed very very unusual to somebody non-Indian growing up in the UK as I did. So this is a very dark, ominous shadow to put over what I thought was actually, because I don't necessarily carry the cultural baggage, I guess, so to speak, of this this type of arrangement. I watched it very much as a kind of another reality show, you know, somewhat lighthearted, a study of people, as the good reality shows can be, right? I mean, I'm not a huge fan of reality TV. Oftentimes it's cut to demonstrate the, you know, the fights and the arguments. This series, rather, is quite a lighthearted look at marriage. It views marriage from a perspective that's, you know, different to the way most Westerners view marriage. I really enjoyed seeing the characters and the types of interactions that they have, the importance of family. I also enjoyed the discussion and debates around what kind of people would fit. I mean, again, being under quarantine, you know, we watch TV together, we watch it somewhat more casually than we have done in the past. So, you know, this is the kind of show that generates debate, right? Will this couple get together? Will they not? Are they suitable? You know, how they look at marriage from their particular point in life versus how I look at marriage at my point in my life. So anyway, I thought it was a very entertaining show, some great characters. Certainly didn't have the same perspective that the two of you did. So I enjoyed it. It's a fun show.
Yazdi.
Yeah, so I have a lot to say about this one. And I learned a lot. So I would right off the bat recommend that after listening to our podcast, people hop on over to Pop Culture Happy Hour, because they've done a brilliant show specifically. I think it's about half an hour only talk about Indian Matchmaking. And they have a couple Indian guests that they've invited, you know, the critics, the New York Times critics, to talk about it. And they have a lot of insights that I didn't get when I watched it. But it was strangely triggering for me, the movie, and I mean the show, because I've been through these aunties. So the whole premise of Indian Matchmaking is that it's a documentary film made by Smriti Mundra. And it's about this auntie. Her name is Seema Taparia, and her role is to help parents find matches for their Indian kids. And they might be...
Or the kids, Yasti. I think that was the eye-opener for me, that it's not just the parents, that some people willingly want to engage in this because they've tried... Right. Tinder and any, you know, Match.com, etc. And so now they're kind of coming to this as a last resort, it felt like.
Correct. And the individuals who want to get married or who want to be matched, they are either in India or they are in the United States. And kind of this matchmaker kind of toggles between the two countries as she's trying to set people up. And I must say the first few episodes are kind of like a lot of people have noted, it's kind of a lot of fun, and it almost plays like a low rent version of Crazy Rich Asians, because the show really amps up on the fluffiness, on the vanity, on how, you know, extravagantly some of these people live, and you know, just how picky they are and so forth. So it starts from that place. But I think one of the reasons why this show has gotten a lot of ink is because of how matter-of-factly it presents sexism and colorism and racism. Like, you know, some of these parents will clearly say, I don't want a daughter, you know, who is dark-skinned. I want a daughter who is fair-skinned. Or they might say things like, you know, I will not, you know, I need this person to have a height of, you know, such and such, 5 feet, 6 inches, which happens all the time in India. I grew up in India, so it's fine with me, but I did not realize how offensive it seems to a lot of people. So this show becomes problematic, and it became problematic for me as well, because it seems like all the girls on the show, first of all, I don't know if they're made to look into a particular archetype. Like there is, you know, one person, Aparna, who's the villain, and she's snooty, and nobody's good enough for her. And then there's the good guy who is Vyasa. And then there is this snobbish other guy for whom this whole thing is a joke. And he's like, you know, he's above everything all. His name is Pradyuman or whatever. So that's fine. I mean, I think all reality shows do that. But I think, and I've read a lot of articles about Indian matchmaking, which beautiful, great, very insightful pieces. But I think at the end of the day, the show's great strength and its downfall is the fact that it presents things as they are. And you can almost say that, and stop me as I'm rambling, but you can almost say that that's how it is and that's how it should be presented. And you don't need to sugarcoat things or you don't need to provide context. But my fear is that somebody who watches it out of context may make the wrong assumptions about Indian culture and so forth. And I belong to the Indian culture, and I will tell you, absolutely colorism exists, absolutely racism exists, absolutely people are obsessed with physical attributes and so forth. So a lot of this is true, but I think the show would have been a little bit better if a little bit more maybe background was provided. But it's how matter-of-factly this auntie, Seema Taparia, presents people as just, it's, you know, the very first
episode. Okay, I'm going to jump in. So here's what I'd say, Yasti. I hear the concern that you're raising because you want it to be perceived in a certain way, which is, it's not a bad thing if that's what you want to do, right? And it's an institution that has been around for years and years and years, this concept of arranged marriage. And the thing that struck me the most was, I think one of the people who are in it says, in fact, if you think about language, there are only two words. There's marriage and love marriage. So when people assume the word marriage in India or in the Indian culture, it is of this nature where it's an arrangement made by two families, and it's more considered than just falling in love, right? Falling in love is a bonus. So here's what I'd say, Yazdi, and I guess I've lived the being of Indian origin, born and raised outside of India, born and raised in London. So for me, here's what I'd say. I think it's a beautiful representation of all of the good and bad things about arranged marriages. And it has these beautiful little vignettes at the beginning, rather like when Harry met Sally, of people who have been married for like T years, right? 40 years, 30 years, 50 years, all giving their experience of their arrangement. And it's beautiful. And so I would just say, look, take it for what it is. It's a lens, not the full lens. It's not global. It's a lens into an interesting idea. And really, like I said at the beginning, it is no different than Match.com or Tinder, except it's not an app. Even when people, to me, when people swipe right or swipe left, you are actually doing exactly what people say to the matchmaker.
No, I think if I had
because she says, what's your ideal partner? Well, I want them to be tall and educated or have a good zest for life. You know, well, and sure, I want them to be fair-skinned and blue-eyed and, you know, have muscles. I mean, I think
if I had a Tinder profile where I said that dark-skinned people didn't apply, my Tinder profile would be pulled down because that would be offensive.
Sure, but you will certain way if you don't like people of that particular shade.
Racism. That's racism, right? No, that's the definition of racism.
It's biased.
A person with a particular physical attribute is no good. They have no place in my life, in my culture.
But people are like
that. I understand. So that's how it is. It's presenting it as is, but I don't think it's as fluffy and fun and as crazy rich Asians as it's made it out to be. I think, first of all, I think the one big issue, I'm glad this exists because it's creating this debate, but Netflix, so this particular filmmaker, she originally presented this idea to television producers in the US and nobody wanted to do this show. So then she went to Netflix India, and Netflix India is trying because they realize there's so many people there. Netflix India wanted to create content for India. So this show was created not for a global market. It was created for the Indian market. And like they do, you know, some little bit of cross promotion. They happened to do cross promotion and this completely took off elsewhere. And so I think it's not the responsibility of the filmmaker to kind of explain things. But I think if you're in India and watching this, it's fine. That's how your life is. But if you're watching it from the outside,
this is part of the challenge of the world in which we're in. I mean, these types of judgments about people exist. And
I know. These
judgments are made by people, whether conscious or unconscious. And I think, you know, labeling them flatly as you know, I have this debate with my father. So my father's from Ghana. And, you know, he talks very... Like, sometimes my you know, as a black man from Africa... When we discuss many of the occurrences in the world, and you know the labels that are put upon them as racist, not racist, matters of culture and identity, his perspective is often very interesting because he has a very and I won't necessarily say that I fully understand it, but he definitely makes a differentiation and distinction between tribalism, which is you know. We're different from the tribe across town and we won't necessarily see eye to eye and, you know, judging those people based upon the tribe from which they come, and racism. And to me, they're not always, you know...
Yeah, I agree.
...different. So in cultures like India and in Africa, they differentiate between people in many different ways by many different characters and qualities that are essentially... prejudice. And prejudice, if you will, is essentially what racism is, right? You prejudge somebody based upon their race or their skin color. Or so these discussions about race and, you know, they're very complex. And I agree. I mean, the Indian context in particular is hard for non-Indians to understand, but it's there.
Yeah, and maybe it's very triggering for me because I've been through this process myself many times. And there's, you know, this auntie always says, what's wrong with you? How come you're not married? You know, that's not a fun, happy environment. And then there are at least two parents who should be in jail because they are explicitly coercing their kids. They're saying, if you don't pick somebody in the next 3 weeks, it's not funny. It's not funny for me. But it is, I know when you watch it, it sounds funny, but they're saying, if you don't marry someone in the next 3 weeks, I'm going to find somebody and you're going to marry them. And I kind of feel bad because this is very illuminating for me because all the guys on Indian matchmaking, they're kind of either ambivalent about it or they're just mama's boys who are just doing it because their mother is asking them to do it. Whereas all the girls on Indian matchmaking seem to really want to, like, I need to do this. I need to have a family. I need to get on with my life. And it's very perceptive that these two people are coming at it from totally different perspectives. And so so all I'm saying is the show is a lot more than Forbidden Island or something else. It's very telling.
That's right. I mean, you know, we could have this conversation, you know, for hours. And I know, I mean, just growing up outside the Indian culture, I had friends who had certain requirements of their future partner, right? You know, she needs to look this way, she needs to have these physical attributes, she needs to have this education, she needs to have, you know, this type of family, this is what she needs to have in life. So everyone brings these lists, and it's funny when it's distilled down to like these little snippets of conversation where and the program does a really good job of poking fun at that because it has these title cards.
It did,
where when somebody's describing their perfect partner, it starts throwing it up as some sort of a checklist. And as a checklist, you know, all the things that we might look for in our perfect partner,
it is poking fun at,
are absurd. Right?
It is. Like, when
anyone does this, you know, she's got to be blonde, she's got to have long legs, or she's got to be, you know, the perfect mother, or like, you know, she needs to be working and in a job, or I want to marry a lawyer. You know, all of these things are absolutely absurd traits when you're trying to distill down this notion. So, it's not like buying a dog, right? You know, I want one with, you know, white paws and a bushy tail, you know, but that's what people do. So it's kind of funny when you see a match.
So, I'm very glad it exists because it's, because I think if they would have tried to kind of made this more adaptable to the Western audience, then a lot of the truth to it would be lost. And, you know, from where you sit,
and that's,
you know, from where you sit, you can watch it from whatever lens where you're sitting at. And I mean, is Seema Taparia this matchmaker? Is she doing great work or not? So that's a big question. It depends again on where you are.
What's fascinating to me is her engagement of these primitive methods like using a face reader or a priest, or the hilarity for me, and I think the laughing comes from that uncomfortableness that is created by the realness of it, and which I think, you know, every culture it has, unfortunately. I think it's just more magnified in this community. But it's such a great watch. I mean, you can literally rip through this. And I kid you not, the person who actually recommended it to me, I had it recommended twice, both were non-Indian, and they said, I cannot stop watching this. And so I came home and I was like, Joe, we have to watch this. And then I think you said, Yazdi told us, have you seen it? I was like, oh my God, we've just finished binge watching it. So very bingeable, I would say.
Yeah. But it's great. I mean, I love that. I love that on its own merit, this kind of show, little show out of India, just rose in prominence.
It's fantastic.
And now it's part of global.
I can't wait for the next one. I don't even know what it's going to bring.
Yeah.
And I love seeing a modern India. Like, Joe and I were lucky enough to travel there last year, and we've spoken about this many times to you, Yazdi, but what a great cosmopolitan place. I mean, I think, again, it breaks those misconceptions. We started the show about, you know, misconceptions and preconceived ideas, and I can't wait to go back. I mean, it's just such a wonderful place that manages to kind of marry, choice of words, like this really old ancient culture with what's happening in the real world, and somehow it manages to do it effortlessly, right? So, yeah. I mean, I think just for that, I love this show. I can't wait.
And there's a lot of cattiness as well.
I love it. That's how life is. What's life without cats and cattiness?
I'm surprised she lets another matchmaker in one of the later episodes.
I really like her. I really liked her.
I don't like her at all. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Indian matchmaking.
Yeah.
But it's a great show. I think it's very telling. It's a study in sociology.
It really is. I love these shows.
Yeah.
All right, so we've blown past the hour mark on the podcast. Lots to say about lots of things. And I think the theme for me today is that a lot of these things that we're watching at home right now, you know, they do generate conversations. And, you know, just because we are all in our separate environments, you know, get on a FaceTime or a Zoom, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we have a podcast excuse to do it, but it's kind of fun just hanging out with friends virtually.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're doing on this podcast. So, you know, don't miss that opportunity to watch this stuff. So let's wrap up the podcast for today. I'll include links to as many of these as I can, given that they are all available on one service or another via streaming. So, you know, again, lockdown being what it is, don't be sad. Lots of stuff to watch. You don't have to be in the back of an airplane or a movie theater to watch this stuff. We can actually enjoy this stuff on our couches.
And lots of good stuff coming up.
Yes, yeah, more content from us soon, because we're certainly not bored, if nothing else. So,
and I should apologize for the background noises. I live pretty close to a hospital, so there's a lot of blaring ambulances going by, which creates a lot of background noise. But
I guess we should make it clear. I don't normally make it clear, but yeah, Yazdi, we're doing this socially distanced still. So, yes. You know, responsible podcasting by Movie Wallers.
Much as we miss you in person,
as much
Yazdi.
As we would like to actually Likewise. Hang out together. But yes, we're doing our bit for the pandemic by not physically being in the same space. All right, until our next podcast, it's too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.